This week on the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, we have a special one-hour episode that is eligible for one AEU for CASC certified administrators. Eden Group Development, the producer of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, is an approved AEU provider through the Board of Ambulatory Surgery Certification, which oversees the CASC and CAPE credentials. To get AEU credit, visit ascpodcast.com and follow the links for AEU. This week, we discuss the latest news and information about the ASC industry and dive into the complicated issue of employee orientation, annual education, in-services, and competencies.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a weekly podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. The ASC regulatory environment is increasingly challenging, but organizations that outsource their regulatory oversight to Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies have an edge. AHS works with ASCs to oversee their quality assurance program, run their meetings, develop education programs, and to always be prepared for surveys. Welcome to episode 28 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for July 2nd, 2018. Recording from our studio in Rochester, New York, with remote recordings from the Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies annual retreat in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS. I'm here with John Gailey, the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies and Eden Group Development, and one of the nation's leading ASC industry experts in regulatory compliance, finance, and administration. John is the author of over 10 books about the ASC industry and a frequent national speaker on all aspects of ambulatory surgery center management. And we've had another busy week.
We have indeed. We're recording here, what is this, Saturday morning? I mean, I've lost all sense of time.
I know.
So we were at our retreat all last weekend. As a matter of fact, if you notice, the dogs are not leaving our side. Now that we're home, they're afraid that we're going to run off and leave them forever.
Yeah, it's been well over a week and a half,
absolutely,
something like that.
We had a wonderful retreat. It was a great opportunity to get away and talk for three solid days about all the things that are exciting things going on with AHS. I think everybody learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And I feel refreshed, but we went right from the retreat. We got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, I think, and headed off to Brooklyn for one of our centers that we knew by then that the surveyors were definitely going to show up, because they failed to show up the other 4 weeks prior. Mm-hmm. They pretty much had to show up by that date. So this was an early option survey. They did incredibly well. I was so proud of them. I think really what an incredible survey. Great surveyors, of course, and we really, I can't say that we had fun during the survey,
but it
went very well, and it was a great week. So it just goes to show, this is what happens when you're always prepared. What's our theme?
Always be prepared.
That's right.
And they were, and I think, as you said, everybody gets nervous when there's a survey coming up.
Yeah.
But it went so well, and they felt confident. They knew what was coming. They knew what they needed to know.
You know, my head got kind of big at the end there. The surveyor said, that this was the best early options survey that she'd ever done. So, you know, I think all of us were walking out of there with pretty big heads by the end of the day. So, but it was good. We have a special episode this week. We should mention, I think we've already mentioned it earlier, but this is a special one-hour episode, eligible for one AEU in the area of human resources for anybody that is CASC certified. So if you wish to get credit for this, go to our website at ascpodcast.com. And we still have an episode number 22 that is also eligible for AEU. You can sign up for that episode, listen to it, and do the same thing. This is going to be an interesting week. We're recording this on June 30th, I believe. July 1st, the beginning of July, is usually when the CMS comes out with the new proposed rates for the ASCs and hospital outpatient departments. They'll do the proposed rulemaking for 2019. And we have, you know, there's a lot of concerns, actually. I mean, a lot of things up in the air right now. OAS caps, we're concerned about what's going to happen there, whether they're going to require us to do, mandatory patient satisfaction surveys, basically, according to a formula that's been determined by CMS.
And a very long one. I know we've talked about that before. It's definitely...
Yeah, you and I were at one of our clients this week, and we were announcing this to them, and there was like 20 people in the room in that QI program, and they were just shocked that anybody would, you know, come up with such an arduous process for asking employees or patients to talk about, their experience, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to be a good thing. Also, what's going to happen is all their Medicare quality reporting requirements. We'll find out about that at that point. Any new procedures that will be reimbursed by Medicare. And, of course, what the Medicare reimbursement rates are going to look like for 2019. In our industry, we're concerned about this because we're also keeping a very close eye on what's going to happen with the Medicare rates related to vascular access. We have quite a number of centers that are vascular access that are considering converting over to an ASC. And I know this particular announcement in July here is going to have a huge impact on their decision-making process. So big day. So this is what we're going to do. I think we're going to drop this episode Sunday night for Monday. If there are really big news, maybe Sue, you and I can get together and do a special episode. Might not be a whole half hour episode, but we'll try to get the news out to everybody as soon as possible. And if it's not terribly exciting, we'll probably wait until next week and then just do a full debrief on it. Just want to let you know we're thinking deeply. I know this is Sue. You're always looking for good news to talk about this coming week. I suspect we'll have a lot of news there. Yeah. So Sue, I thought we would just talk a little bit about. The retreat that we just did, because I think there's a lot of relevance to our listeners and to what they have in their daily job. I mean, for us as a company, we rarely have an opportunity to be together in one place at one time.
Yeah, we travel a lot, so that's kind of where we run into problems. We're not often in the same place. But I think with any organization, everybody's off doing their own jobs, they've got their own focus. So to come together for that specific reason of increasing your communication as well as the education and all that type of thing, that was really helpful.
And make sure people are all going in the same direction. It's always valuable. I mean, this was an expensive thing for us to do. I mean, to take people off the road for 3 days, solid days, only to discuss, things of high-end, relevance here was quite an investment in our company. And I think it really paid off. So let's just talk a little bit about what we did during that time. So the first day we dedicated toward long-range planning, which we're a relatively young company, only coming up on 10 years. But we've grown so dramatically that we really needed to step back and, look at our mission, look at our values, look at our, long-term goals. We set, 3-year goals for the organization, including the, employee list. We've actually come up with a way of determining, different levels of employees within our organizations, which we never had before.
Well, and like you said, that overview is so important because you get so busy, like as you said, we're growing a lot.
Right.
So we're really very focused and busy most days. So to step back and really see, okay, where are you going? What do you want? Does everybody have the same goals? And all that. It is very helpful just to get that overview and be all kind of on one page.
Well, and we actually have an example of that. I mean, just this last week, we've been working with this client who, just started up, and they had rushed so quickly into doing things. Fortunately, they ended up having some time. They had luxury of time because the surveyors didn't show up when we expected them to after they had opened, and they had an opportunity to spend more time getting together and making sure that everybody's roles were well-defined, but that was not an easy event, and really for them, if they had taken the time to do a retreat, to pull people aside and spend some solid days going through a strategic plan, I think it would have been a lot more advantageous.
And obviously, it doesn't have to be a 3-day retreat.
Nor does it have to be off-site.
An afternoon.
Yeah, that's right.
It can be just in my old job, we used to have a weekly meeting where everybody, and I've had that in other companies, but this was it really was geared to hearing what everybody had to say, and it was. You didn't miss that. That was very important.
Right.
And I think things like that where you're just setting aside that time, whether it's an afternoon, once a week, or, a larger chunk of time.
Well, and I got it personally, you know this, it was kind of painful for me, you know, as we were going through this, because, you know, I mean, as the owner, as the leader of the organization, you kind of assume everything's working perfectly. I live in this la-la land and I like it there. but, you know, during the course of the event or the
retreat.
Yeah. You know, you learn things that weren't working quite well, and people were very, they had an opportunity. They didn't feel fearful to talk about them, and they brought those things up, and we were able to resolve them. But, you know, but it's an opportunity for them to know that, you know, I, as the owner, I, as the leader of the organization, care and, and willing to listen to their views and to work on solutions to it. But we're, whereas without that time alone away, it's very difficult to do that. What? So let's talk about the second day of the retreat. So the first day was really all long-range planning. The second day was just looking at our tools, which is an interesting thing because, again, there's a lot of relevance to our surgery centers. We work with various tools, computer, you know, modeling, you know, ways we store our data, how our libraries are stored. And of course, just the database that we use in order to maintain our client information. You know, we're trying to get most of our clients to move away from those famous binders. You know, I really hate it when, you know, the surveyors show, I hate it being a surveyor showing up and they roll all those binders in for you to look at and you just know it's going to be a really long survey. And putting a lot of that into a computer now is definitely a way of making sure we organize better.
But as you do it, if you do it piecemeal as you're going along and, oh, this is a good tool, let me add that. Yeah. And if you don't have that time to step back and look at it, then people, you know, you can't find what you're looking for. You know, you just have to reassess every so often and, make sure the tools are working for you rather than causing more problems.
Right. I noticed that you fell asleep during the session where Jenna and Alex, Jenna and Alex were getting deep into exactly what folders for things we're going to go into. I just tuned out completely. I don't know what Judy was doing. I think she was working on something else altogether, but the two of them really got into that and really kind of, and the good news is now we actually do know where everything is stored, thankfully, but that took a while. And then the last day was probably the most interesting. So it was an opportunity for us to do training. And today we're, of course, going to be talking about training a little bit, you know, in our next segments. But, you know, some very basic training in some very basic areas. One of the things that we realize is we have some cultural competence issues, you know, that we work with a wide variety of different clients in different areas, different parts of the country. And we're realizing that, you know, we just don't understand those cultures that well. And we wanted to understand them better. You know, what are the traditions, et cetera. So you actually did that. You did a whole nice section on cultural competence for us.
Yep. I found that really interesting, you know, and as you said, just looking at ways not to, you know, inadvertently insult somebody or say something that you shouldn't say. And of course, the overriding thing, which it may sound so simple, but just trying to be aware. And if you feel like you've done something wrong or have not been respectful, just ask about, you know, if something, if you're saying.
Right.
I think just knowing that you're respecting somebody and if you may have insulted them or you've said something and it didn't seem to come out quite right, you know, just being willing to learn all the time because, of course, we're not going to know everything we need to know about all different cultures. But, you know, you do sometimes see things that are repeated, you know, mispronounced names or, you know, references to a certain culture. And I just think there's, you know, we have to be respectful of people, you know.
Well, that was an area that was particularly of interest to me because, of course, I spent so much time with the public, so much time with our clients, and I think I learned a lot from it. And then we, you know, we delved into just making sure that very basic information. Sometimes you realize that, you know, we rush into so many things or that we kind of gloss over things. So we just stepped back and talked a little bit about, you know, very basic information about how surveys work, about how the survey environment, what's kind of going on, the differences between the different types of survey organizations, what's the difference between CMS and accreditation and state things. And again, things that you probably should be talking about in your organizations on a basic level. Don't assume everybody knows these things. And often that knowledge is kept at a very high level in the organization. And it's really information that should be with everybody.
Yeah, or just and separated because everybody kind of has their own strength. Like Alex is very good at knowing how to use smart sheets and different computers, and a lot of the younger people are.
Right.
And for my part, that confuses me a lot of times, just that basic computer stuff. Right. So having him share some of that information, you know, and so if everybody takes part and shares what they know and what their area of expertise is, I think it just helps everybody to be able to do a better job.
Very good point. Very basic knowledge. I was teaching computer science in the 90s to nurses, so I have this great story I got to tell you. So in the 90s, I was teaching at a local college in a master's level nursing program, and we were teaching about how to use a computer, which at that point literally started from, this is how you turn it on. This is, what you do when it's turned down. And we were talking about viruses at that point. I mean, viruses have been around for a long time. And so we had these floppy disks, and the college had, made everybody aware. You really have to be very careful about those floppy disks that you bring in, because they might, spread viruses. And one of the nurses said, like a CIC trained nurse said, now, how close to the computer does it have to be for the virus to be spread?
She's saturating it with alcohol swabs.
Right, exactly. Oh, no, I think we got a lot more training here. But that's the basic type of thing we have to train.
If you don't know it, you don't know it. And the people that do know it often have a hard time grasping that it's confusing to other people. And then,
right. I could see that frustration with Alex during the session. It's like you and I are, trying to understand Smartsheets. The program that we use here is very complex, and yet the young people pick it up right away. But I thought it was a very good, example of how, we had the luxury of time. Perhaps most of our listeners might not have that, but I do think that sometimes we undervalue the education process. And that's really what we're talking about today is, please don't take this as something you just need to, shove a bunch of papers in front of somebody and say, hey, learn all this and sign and say that you read it. That's not what education is about, and that's likely to get you into trouble. So
yeah, and it has to be relevant to the person. It has to,
timely. Relevant, timely,
buy-in.
Exactly, and something that is pertinent to the job that they're doing. Let's take a short break, and then we'll jump right into it.
So we all know that education is important in an ambulatory surgery center. People have to have initial training, they have to have in-services, and annual education. Let's break this down into a few sections. We're going to discuss what we need to do for education, how we will do it, how we document it, and where, as well as the frequency of it, and competencies.
So let's start with what we do for education. So it's important that an employee, before they start working in the organization, have an appropriate orientation. And there's a requirement that, from CMS and from the accrediting organizations that there be orientation and training completed within 30 days of the beginning of their employment. So we don't just, hire somebody and throw them right into the fire there. They really need to have some very basic information and advanced information as they go about it. So at a minimum, the orientation and training needs to include, the following things. We have to talk about the fire, the safety, and the disaster preparedness plan. That's the emergency plan. Including, how to use a fire extinguisher, RACE, the acronyms we use for fire safety, PASS for using a fire extinguisher, how to use that equipment, the infection control and infection prevention and control program, including bloodborne pathogen training and other training required by OSHA. And by the way, this is one of those areas that we find people often rely on national programs, like they might use one of these programs that you can do online. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is the requirement is that you have training in your infection control plan. So while you can use that for basic training about OSHA and infection prevention and bloodborne pathogens, you still have to train them specifically on what your program is. That's where you're going to fail if you don't take that seriously and don't make it tailor it to your own organization. That gets to the next item, the safety program, including exposure control training and sharps injury prevention. These are going to be very different for every organization. So just using an online program is not going to give your employees enough information. The risk management program, including training on the reporting of adverse events. And that's going to be very specific to your organization. We all know that, HHHC and Joint Commission have different ways of approaching adverse event reporting. They even have different terminology for it. And confidentiality and privacy training, that's, you know, HIPAA, for example. Now, a lot of that is very general, and that probably is easily trained nationally. But again, you have to inform your employees as to, you know, how you you implement HIPAA in your organization, how you make sure that you assure the privacy of your employees and your patients. I'm sorry. You assure the privacy of your patients there, because every organization is different, and you have a different way of registering them and treating them while they undergo the care at the surgery center. So
the overall overview of HIPAA, they can, you can talk to them about what the guiding principles are, but then they need to know how do you implement that
in your organization
and enforce it in, you know, your specific place.
So that gets to the second question is, you know, how do we do education? And I'll tell you, a lot of organizations use what we call the read and sign. It's very common, which basically means that you hand them a book and you say, this is all the information you need to know about HIPAA and OSHA and all the policies that we have in the organization. And then you have them sign saying that they did that. The problem with that type of a training, unfortunately, is that there's no feedback mechanism. There's no real way to determine that they actually took that information in and are aware of all of the intricacies of whatever was trained. And we've seen this in a couple situations where, you know, we develop training programs for our facilities, and then all they do is ask them to read and sign, and they basically, sometimes I believe, probably just look at the binder, open it up, look in the index, and then sign off that they did all the training without perhaps going through it. So we've actually developed a process now where we have kind of a mini test for the training manual to make sure that they actually are listening, or I'm sorry, that they are actually reading, you know, things in the training manual, or if we present it live, that they're listening to what we're talking about. And I think that definitely helps. The danger in not getting that feedback mechanism, making sure that they are actually paying attention to it, is a surveyor shows up and asks questions of the employees, and the employees say, oh, I've never heard of that before, or I didn't know anything about it. Happened with one of our clients a while ago. They're no longer a client of ours, but we know that they probably were not getting the employees to do all the training they should have been doing, and surveyors showed up and said, why are you not doing things right? And they said, well, we've never been trained on that, and yet there was proof there that they had been trained on it, or they should have been trained on it, but unfortunately, it wasn't real training, apparently. So make sure, in whatever way you train your employees, all the things that happen in your organization or need to be trained in your organization, that they have some, that you have some proof that they actually did do that work. As I said, I'm not sure I'm very comfortable with read and sign. I mean, I think that on an annual basis, we should take, you know, 2 to 3 hours to sit down with our employees and go through all of this information, and in orientation too. I know it's tougher in orientation because you're constantly orienting new employees to your organization, but they really deserve to have some hands-on, you know, one-on-one time with somebody that's knowledgeable about the information in that training manual. And I think it behooves us to really spend that time once a year. And every time that we do it, we do training often for our clients. Interesting conversations develop. And you've seen it, Sue. You're one of our educators here. You've seen how, you know, that those conversations occur, questions come up, which actually makes the training relevant to the employees. So I think that it really is wise to start considering doing in-person stuff. I am not a fan of online education services. I know that they're very popular right now. The problem I have, and I'm having some debates with some organizations that are actually thinking of sponsoring the podcast even, that indeed you have to be very careful. I don't mind online education as long as they are adapted to that organization. As a matter of fact, we have a, you know, we do offer to our clients that type of an option.
Yeah, but or maybe kind of as a supplement, because then they can get some information, some basic information from that. But then there has to be that personal thing, too, where that discussion can develop. So
that's
if they have questions that they don't just... Because if you read something and you don't understand it and all you have to do is sign it at the end, you just really don't, you know, you just go through it and maybe don't really delve in very much. But once that discussion starts, then you start thinking a little bit outside the box or whatever, where, you know, what if this happened? What if that happened? You know, what about this instance? And that's where the real learning, I think,
occurs,
you know, really that will stay with you.
So I think, again, the best training probably is done in person. Be very careful about the online training programs. Remember something, by the way. OSHA Bloodborne Pathogen Training. One of the requirements of OSHA Bloodborne Pathogen Training is that there has to be in-person training included in that training. So you cannot use totally electronic or reading for that. There has to be the opportunity for the employee who has been educated on the OSHA blend board pathogen to ask questions of a person knowledgeable about that area. Now, what we often do with that is we, you know, provide an opportunity for the nurse, or we, you know, make sure that there is a period of time when the employees have to be able to ask questions, and then just document that they didn't have any questions, or if they did have questions, those questions were answered. How we determine that employees learned, again, we talked about perhaps doing a test, but it's also important that we fully document how the training was done, what training was done, when it was done, which gets us to the next section, is how and where do we document the training. Now, as a surveyor, I have to look at, you know, documentation of the training. And often, unfortunately, that is not included in the employee file. And yet that is kind of what I believe the requirement is that you have some proof in the employee's file of the ongoing training and competencies, which we'll talk about in a minute. So the training, remember we have to do orientation within 30 days. Training in those areas we talked about earlier have to be done annually thereafter, and the training should be consistently documented in the employee's file. Also, it's important to remember that additional training might need to be done during the year, and this would come out of your quality improvement or statement of deficiencies or anything where it indicated that the training was not sufficient to educate people in different areas. For example, during your chart audit, you might realize that the nurses don't fully understand how to complete preoperative or postoperative assessments, so you would have to do some additional training and document that as part of an in-service. I think I should point out that I find sometimes people use the term in-services for what really are mandatory educational programs. So let's separate that out right now. Mm-hmm. Mandatory educational programs would be those things that we listed earlier that have to be done on an annual basis, such as HIPAA training, OSHA bloodborne pathogen training, and adverse events, etc. In-services are done because you have a new piece of equipment and you need to learn how to use it, or you're doing a new added a new service line and you need to educate the nurses on how to do that. Or you have a new procedure that you have to discuss, process or a policy in your organization.
So they tend to be a one-time thing and then added to the orientation.
Correct. So a good example of this would, you know, on an annual basis, we have to do infection control training. And as part of that, we do standard hand hygiene training. But as we all know, as we go through hand hygiene surveillance, there might be situations where the surveillance indicates that there's an ongoing problem with hand hygiene. So at that point, you do additional in-services that go beyond the scope of the first training that you did. And then you come back and you realize, well, it still didn't work. You know, now we have to do some additional training. So in-service trainings are things that are done to supplement annual stuff as well as to educate people on new processes that you have in your organization or to deal with issues that came up during the year. The delivery of training should always be documented, be it orientation, annual mandatory training, or those in-services that you have. And they really should be documented probably in two places, in the employee's file as well as in the educational binder. So, for example, you probably should have a list of your employee file of all of the in-services that were done during the year for that employee, as well as in the in-service book, you should have a list of all of the in-services that were done and the people that were attending. Likewise, with mandatory education, you might do an annual mandatory educational program with everybody, have a list of all the people that attended it, and then have an individual list in each employee's file of all the mandatory education that was performed during that year. It is very important that you keep track of that, because you might run into a situation where an employee was not there the day that you did the annual mandatory education, and you're going to have to somehow document that. So if you don't document it in both places, you're not going to be able to catch that. And by the way, you should give the employee the responsibility of making sure that they are indeed doing the annual mandatory education and then cross-checking it.
So sort of just have a checklist in the employee's file, and so you can look quickly and say, okay, what did they miss? Or they can bring it to your attention.
So what we like to do is we have this annual checklist of all the items. And by the way, ours is quite extensive. We want to make sure that we not only do the mandatory stuff, what in any given state, you're going to have specific requirements in that state that you have to meet, as well as things that might be specific to your organization. Maybe you're doing radiology, so you have to do radiology training or laser training. Those would be annual things that need to be done. Conscious sedation training for nurses that are qualified in conscious sedation. So all of those should be documented in detail in the charts as well as in the training records. Let's move on to competencies. So this is an area that really hadn't been a big deal probably until about 4 or 5 years ago. It used to be, there used to be much more of an emphasis on performance evaluations as opposed, which are still important, I think. But now, especially with our clinical providers, there really is a focus now on making sure that we have appropriate competencies in each of these areas. And I know, Sue, you have been working with the nursing staff in our company to develop some of the competencies. And indeed, we'll be rolling out doing some of the competencies for our organizations. So this should be a high priority topic in every one of your organizations. And so, for example, in HHHC, Chapter 2 actually requires the following. As evidenced by the personnel files, all staff employed possess at least the minimum qualifications, experience, competencies, and licensure and or certification required for their positions, and require periodic appraisal of each person's job performance, including current competence. That's pretty specific. That they need to, have it documented. By the way, it does say, and at least it's bolded on my piece of paper here, personnel files. So it needs to be documented there, and that that it be done periodically. Now, there could be some debate about what is periodic mean, since it doesn't necessarily annual. But I do think that regular often does mean that, and going beyond that, probably you have to have some darn good reasons, or that you're not doing it on an annual basis,
and just keeping track of it. If everybody does it every year, right? Then
it makes it very easy. So for clinical staff, competencies are probably most important. You can do it for administrative staff also, but for clinical staff, it's probably that's the best example of where it needs to be done. So the different areas that you probably should be doing competencies would be like processing and cleaning of instruments. So this would not only be for the nursing staff, but also for any of your sterile processing techs. Performing wave testing. This is very specific in many of the accreditation organization handbooks. Conscious sedation training, I believe, should be done on an annual basis, and as well as a competency. Daily duties such as acting as a scrub tech, acting as circulator, the pre-op nurse, post-op nurse, intraoperative, etc. And then we really recommend that you develop these competencies specific to your organization. So you can be very careful about using canned things. I know Ask a Connect, for example, has a lot of great competencies up there. We've used some of them ourselves in developing our own. But you need to make sure that they're relevant to your organization and that they're just not something that people just check off and run down. That they're they're very specific in their content, have areas for comments, and make sure your employees take it seriously when they're doing competencies on each other. Have nurses with clearly strong skills in each of the areas perform the competencies on the other employees, or bring in an outside consultant. Sometimes that's what we do in our organization, for example. We use our own nurses to perform the competencies of the nurses in our organizations. Also, in areas such as sterilization and sterile processing, we find that the equipment suppliers often can do competencies for us to assure that that the employees are doing those, using the equipment in the way that the manufacturer intended and using the proper processes there. So definitely consider the possibility of bringing that in. By the way, often they don't even charge for that. It's included in the service that they're already you're already paying for paying them to do. So that's kind of a quick overview of I guess it wasn't very quick, wasn't it? But it's an overview of education and training, orientation, things like that. Let's take a short break, and we're going to kind of come back with the crew from Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies here and talk about education, long-range planning, and this was recorded during our retreat in the Poconos last week.
Yep. One of the sponsors of the ASC podcast with John Gailey is Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. John, can you tell us about some of the services that AHS offers?
Sure. So we are a regulatory oversight organization. We basically are involved in the business of helping organizations to always be prepared for surveys and to respond to surveys and just to become your outsourced regulatory compliance organization. We also do financial oversight too, but the stuff that's probably most pertinent to most of our listeners relates to regulatory compliance and accreditation compliance. So our goal is always to have our organizations remain prepared for surveys. And so to that end, we maintain the policy manuals. We develop educational programs. We can even do the educational programs for the organization. We oversee the quality improvement program. We write the minutes for the quality improvement program, if that's what the organization wishes. And we help run the governing body meetings, again, if that's what the organization wants, and we'll write the governing body minutes for that. We also do periodic mock surveys. We help the organization through a survey, and we'll help them respond to the plan of correction necessary after a deemed status survey. And most importantly, this is all at a fixed price that might surprise most of our listeners.
Hey, so how do our listeners learn more?
So for a free, no-obligation consultation, give me a call at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And you can also visit our website at www.ah-strategies.com and fill out the contact us form.
Okay, thanks, John.
So, Sue, during the retreat, you and I and all of the employees of Ambitri Healthcare Strategies spoke. We basically had a very freewheeling discussion of the importance of education, and we also talked about a few topics, such as how we deal with recent graduates and new employees. And so I thought we'd play that, and then let's just talk a little bit about some of the highlights I felt of that discussion.
Okay.
This is John Gailey, and I'm here at the Ambitri Healthcare Strategies Annual Retreat at the Split Rock Resort in the Poconos, and I have with me all of the full-time employees of AHS and some of the part-time, as well as a few significant others. We invited everyone here to spend some time doing our strategic planning and our annual education, review our current issues and opportunities, and to brainstorm our solutions and to have a little bit of fun. It's Sunday morning, and we just finished a big Sunday brunch, and I forced everyone, including the significant others, into our makeshift studio to kick off our special podcast. So, welcome, everyone. Please sound cheerful and happy to be here.
Whether you like it or not.
Oh, my Lord. So let's go around the table and introduce everyone and their role in Ambitri Healthcare Strategies, or if you are a significant other, your job in addition to supporting your partner in this auspicious company. So I'm going to start with you, Alex.
Sure. I'm Alex. I'm Director of Operations at AHS. I manage John. Which is what we like to say.
He tries.
No easy task.
No easy task.
I'm Mauricio Alvarez. I am Jenna's spouse, and I work with ASC on helping them with data management and cost reports. And I also am a research associate with the University of Nevada, Reno.
Jenna Alvarez, senior nurse consultant at AHS, work with a lot of the policy manual and quality improvement.
Judy D'Ambrosio, I'm their director of education here at AHS. So I deal with the educational binders and impromptu education for clients when necessary. And basically anything John or Alex asks me to do.
Yeah, every company needs a jack of all trades. Yeah. Somebody that defaults to when nobody else volunteers to do
so
a special project.
I'm a Judy
project.
Of all trades.
Yes, you are. And I'm Mike, Judy's significant other spouse. Besides that, I'm a manager at a medical device company, Ortho Clinical Diagnostic. I deal with the analytical labs and the technical aspects of the business. And for AHS, I support my wife cleaning the laundry.
She thanks you.
And I'm Sue, senior nurse consultant and co-podcast host. I don't know.
And I'm John Gailey, Sue's significant other. And I support her in every way that I can, and then she supports me. So it's really great to be here. Sorry, everybody having some fun here. I know we're kind of at the end of our fun part. Now we're going to get into the serious things in the next 3 days here. But we had a great brunch just a few hours ago. I think we're all still feeling the effects of it. We've also been doing some games. So one of the things I find interesting about board games is the ability to learn things from it. So one of the things that we've been doing is playing a couple board games here. We played probably one of the top games right now in the industry. It's called
Pandemic,
thank you, which is a cooperative game, which means that you don't compete against each other. You compete together against a pandemic, basically, and you try to defeat the pandemic. And we played that on Thursday night, and we did not win the pandemic.
The diseases won
this time. So yes. I think we worked together well, but unfortunately, we weren't able to. Timeliness, I notice, is a problem. Getting things done before time runs out. It seems to be kind of a trend in the company, doesn't it?
Sometimes.
So let's talk a little bit. I think communication is really the major theme of this episode, this podcast episode here. And it's a major challenge in all organizations. Our organization is no exception at all. We operate virtually. We have no office except the dining room in Susan my house when we can all get together. And we realized, Alex and I kind of realized probably about 4 or 5 months ago that we needed to get away from the place for a while. You know, up in the mountains, we barely have internet connectivity here, barely have telephone. So truly, we are somewhat isolated to kind of talk about the bigger picture and make sure that everybody is up to speed with the various educational things. So I think retreats such as ours are great opportunities to get away from the day-to-day operations and to talk about the big picture and plan. So while I have all of you here chained to your chairs with microphones pushed against your faces, I thought I'd ask a few questions and kind of get things kicked off. So I'm actually going to start off with some questions of those that are not part of our company. Mike, you work for a very big company. Your organization has huge resources. You have significant regulatory issues similar to those in our industries. How does your company do it, and what might be the lesson for smaller companies like ours?
Well, John, I think the important thing is communication, as you lead off, making sure everybody understands their role and how they fit into the overall picture. The other important thing is training. Training is a critical aspect of the business. We're under numerous regulatory agencies, whether it's FDA, ISO 9000 requirements, OSHA, et cetera. And training is a critical part of that. Audit readiness is what we call it. Mm-hmm. That it's important to be proactive because the training up front allows the audits to go smoother, allows the training to be sent to all members of the organization. And when audits do come through, it's a lot better to be out front and proactive to allow deficiencies to be expedited quickly and to minimize those deficiencies, because they require a lot of resources and a lot of time to answer those, as opposed to being proactive and allow those audits to go smoothly.
So I think one of the things that was kind of interesting when you and I are talking is, you know, you're talking about how you have entire departments that are literally involved in making sure you mitigate the issues that they identify. And of course, that doesn't happen with us, you know, with most of our centers. As a matter of fact, I think one of the reasons that people hire companies like ours now is because they don't even want to deal with that. So what types of skills are you looking for in the people? I don't think you work in that department, but what types of skills do you see in those people that are doing this full time, and, you know, how effective are they in that position?
Well, what we're looking for is, as you mentioned at the beginning, communications. How do they communicate and how organized they are? Those are, the two key attributes that we look for in that auditing function in the departments. And also being up to date on the regulations, because they're evolving. We sell worldwide. There's different regulatory agencies that we're responsible to adhere to their regulatory requirements. And to make sure that they're current on what those regulations are is really a critical attribute.
And you're juggling a lot more than, I mean, we think our job is tough because we have to juggle the various regulations, CMS, OSHA, et cetera, here in the United States, but you have to deal with it worldwide also, which greatly increases the problem that you have.
All right. And what we're finding is worldwide, the regulatory agencies are kind of banding together to try to create umbrella organizations that through one audit or a couple of audits are going to allow the regulatory requirements of a particular country to be met, so that, again, we can sell our products worldwide.
Correct. Interesting thing. We actually didn't talk about this before we were planning this, but the Trump administration has just published some recommendations for reorganization of the government, including consolidation of various regulatory agencies and the functions within those organizations. Now, it doesn't seem like there's much of a chance of this getting through, but that, again, is going to cause a problem because, as you know, for all of us, as we look at the regulations we have and the oversight organizations that are going to be watching us. So we have to keep a very close eye on that. So stay tuned. Mauricio, now you're a significant other, but you are actually also temporarily, as you mentioned, an employee for us working during the summer here while you're the unfortunate thing for college professors like yourself is that if you don't get hired before the semester, you might have to wait another whole semester. So we're glad to have you on board. We're going to be using you for some very boring work with the cost reporting here in New York, but we're also going to kind of use you a little bit on the research side and some of those skills. But I thought what would be interesting to talk to you about is, as a professor, the job market right now is really very difficult. I don't think in general most of our centers hire new employees, But it's getting to the point where the job market is so tight, you know, we have to hire younger people and we're going to have to start training them. Those of us around the room here that are not millennials, I'm not looking at Alex and Jenna, but, you know, I think it is a challenge to deal with that population. And this is hot right now in all of the organization, all the meetings like our conferences is how do we deal with it? But it's interesting because I'm not sure we ever get the right advice, but you're working directly with them and you're getting them prepared for our world. Just can you talk a little bit about that and what you think we need to know about that population that we're working with, those recent graduates?
Right. I think the very first thing you want to keep in mind is population is very diverse. It's very broad. So trying to apply a one-size-fits-all rule, it's clearly...
There's no such thing as a millennial.
It's just not going to work very well. I had an experience. I've taught in both major research universities and smaller colleges, and you do need to fit your approach to those different populations. Different types of students go to large universities versus smaller colleges. In the same way, you want to keep in mind the background of the individuals that you're hiring when it comes to training. If you are generally hiring people with, say, a bachelor's degree or a 40-year degree of some sort, there are probably some things that you can assume they know about, and others that you wouldn't assume if you're hiring people with a high school diploma or with a 2-year degree. At the same time, those assumptions sometimes fail, and therefore it's not a bad idea to sort of gauge the knowledge of your new hires. There's nothing wrong with what I've done in the past is do some preliminary testing. In a classroom, it's a lot easier to do a pop quiz. But something like that, so you have an idea of what do people know? So some things you can skip right away and some others you may want to reinforce. And that's really it. Just first rule of training is know your trainees. Know what they is it that they need. Remember that, again, it's not a one-size-fits-all.
Your degree actually is partially in psychology. Yes. And so Judy and I have been talking about this a lot lately. I mean, we've started to introduce some testing mechanisms in our system because we've had some educational failure, shall we say. In other words, we've realized some of our organizations, they literally hand the book to the employees. The employees say that they read it, but we know that they didn't. So now we're starting to do testing. So this is new to us. I mean, I teach in a college too, and I have a little bit of testing experience, but you're shall we say, the professional when it comes to that. And you've studied the psychology of testing. Are any recommendations for us as to how we assess that knowledge before we hire them or upon hire? I mean, at some point we might just decide they're right, but we're trying to figure out what we need to do to educate them to that next level.
Quick and simple. It's not, again, assessment is not my primary area of expertise.
Understood.
I have some knowledge of it because I've worked with it. But in general, you want to identify what are the concepts and the ideas that you really want people to understand, and then adapt your testing to that.
Right.
If you're looking for broad understanding of abstract concepts, which in regulatory compliance may not necessarily be the most important thing, but in those cases, you can go for something, some short quiz that has open-ended answers.
Right.
Give people space to explain themselves in a way that lets them demonstrate their actual knowledge.
And you find out what a good writer they are.
Right.
Or not.
They're not. Yes. Right. That happens, unfortunately, a lot. But the other angle is sometimes you do need people whose knowledge is very specific and very detail-oriented.
Right.
And in those scenarios, you do probably want to look for something a little more structured. Give them a little less space because when there is one right answer, you can ask them to write all they want. But if they cannot identify that answer right away, you would just spend needless time reading stuff. Reading answers that may not get to the point.
And I think the correlation to our business right now is the difference between hiring a staff nurse for pre-op and post-op versus hiring an infection control nurse. You know, we're going to be different. You know, one is a very highly specialized thing where you're going to need some more focused questions, whereas the other ones is just, what type of nurse are you and, you know, how do you approach nursing here? Great.
So let's talk a little about the importance of planning. And Alex, you and John designed our program. Tell me the goals when you establish the agenda and how do you think that translates to our client?
Yeah, so there were really two major items that we were looking for when we were doing our program. One was identifying our strategies for the upcoming year. And then the other, the goal was education. And I think both are huge for our clients. Every year we do strategies. We put together a group of strategies for our clients and their goals for the year. And so that's kind of what we've started doing as we're getting bigger. It used to be just John.
I tell you what the goals are, and everybody does it, right?
Exactly.
It doesn't work that way anymore.
Nope, not anymore. So we're starting to include a lot of the other employees in that.
Right.
And then for the education, we basically asked everybody to talk about their expertise. And we thought about what are the items that we're really lacking in, where are our gaps in knowledge, and we wanted to really hone in on those and start improving our knowledge in those areas.
Well, and it's interesting too, because Alex, one of the things that we've identified, which maybe our clients don't realize, we recognize as a problem, but they also have this problem, and that's cultural sensitivity. I mean, we have cultural sensitivity training. Judy builds it into everybody's thing, but it's a very generic, you know, training program where we talk about how we have to be, you know, sensitive to cultures. And what we've realized is that that's only part of it. I mean, you really have to delve into some of these cultures and understand the differences, understand how differently those the people in different countries who come to the United States, you know, react to, you know, simple questions, simple customs that we have here. So a big part of this, actually, I think you dedicate a couple hours to cultural sensitivity training in all the different areas. But we have, you know, many clients from many different countries that we have to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of my background is actually in international relations. So, you know, I studied a lot of cultures.
Yeah.
But just in my brief study of it, I know that it's like the regulatory compliance industry.
Yeah.
It's impossible to know it all. So every time you come into a new culture that you haven't interacted with before, you need to kind of study up a little bit to understand and ask questions to figure out what you're missing and what's going on, what you're not seeing.
So, Judy, you're director of education. Let's talk about educational programs in general and the importance of taking time. And we're spending quite a bit of money, actually, and time, probably time more importantly, here to take people away from their regular jobs. It's a luxury that we have, but a luxury a lot of our centers don't have. So let's talk a little bit about how often things are done in surgery centers and how that can sometimes backfire and what we propose or what we as an organization are heading toward.
Well, exactly. This is a luxury for the seven of us to take ourselves away from our normal work life to think about what we really need in order to be successful as a team of our own. So when it comes to our centers, I find that sometimes there's a little bit of reticence.
Yeah.
And okay, so let's block off our schedule for one afternoon so that we can all sit together and work on an educational program. And there is some pushback to that.
A lot of pushback.
You know, okay, I was being, you know,
and I think
time,
one of the other.
It's also a profitability margin. Right. I don't want to not do patients for the last 2 hours of the day because lose this.
Don't you think it's also that people feel sometimes that, why do we have to learn this again? I mean, everybody knows about HIPAA. Everybody knows about OSHA, bloodborne pathogens, right? I mean, they feel like they learned it 10 years ago and that nothing's changed.
Everybody thinks
they know. Do you remember everything that you learned 10 years ago? I certainly don't remember.
I can't remember what I learned yesterday.
I think based on your experiences, too, you get different things out of it each year.
Each time.
Right.
Like, oh, this would have been helpful to remember when this happened.
Right.
Yes.
Experiences change the understanding of the educational programs that you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
it makes you ask new questions, too.
You do have pushback, not only from the center administration that doesn't want to give up the profitability of the time that they need to put in, and then a little bit of pushback, like Jenna said, from your center employees who say, oh, my God, why do I have to listen to this again? So you do get the pushback from administration because it's a profitability loss, and I get that. And like Jenna said, you get the pushback from the employee who's like, I have to listen to HIPAA again.
Right.
Oh my God, why are you doing? I could go home early. We could block off the schedule and I could leave. And I get all of that. But I think as you get into the day-to-day operations of any business, whether it's one of our centers or even ourselves, you forget how much of return you're getting on this investment.
Yeah.
The more time you spend educating your employees, the more important they feel, the more committed they are to the jobs they do and to each other. You're making, like my husband had mentioned, the more proactive you are in keeping them up to date on what's needed, it's far better to take a half an hour in the afternoon to teach them what they need than to spend a whole week on a plan of correction.
Well said. Yeah.
So you're worried about that profitability that you'll lose for the afternoon. Well, think about all the hours you're going to have to put in to fixing a problem that could have been done.
And the negative publicity that you potentially can get for not doing something.
I agree.
The first time.
And the last annual education I did for one of our clients is I went out and they blocked their schedule and I had, you know, 15 people. Now, one, that's, you know, cost effective. You got everybody done.
Right.
Two, they hit their mandatory yearly date for having it done. But what I found so wonderful about it is as those 17 people talked to each other
yeah.
about, oh, really? You have to do that? Because sometimes you work with a person for years and really don't know what their part of your process is. So these people were having this very open and honest and friendly discussion. And
about things that they do every single day.
The part of what I did. It really had very little to do about with me as a trainer. Yeah. They're going to remember what their friend said.
Right.
Far better than they're going to remember what I droned on about. So having that, having you all of them sitting down in one place and committed to this is an investment in all of us, in the center, in our patients and their safety, and in ourselves so that we are more productive and we work better together. Like, I know the seven of us are all friends and we enjoy being together and have been for all the years we've been together, but we're all going to feel closer after this week than we ever did before. And maybe we didn't think we needed it, but we're going to find that there's things we learn together here that we'll remember more.
That's right.
It sounds kind of like mushy and stupid, but that commitment to the time is far more of a return on investment than you think you're going to get.
You know, when I started a surgery center back in 2003, and one of the things, I took this all to heart, even in 2003 before we started it. And again, we had a little bit of a luxury. We had hired people a good, 3 weeks beforehand, and we got people assigned. The funny thing about that is that team of people, those, I think there were 7 or 9 people, they still get together periodically. Not all of them work for the company, but they've been long-term friends. And that's part of the culture of that organization. Those people continue to talk about all those things that they experienced together in that very beginning. And they're the historians of that organization. They help the others to understand how they got to where they are and how that culture of the company has developed. Which brings me to the next part. So, Jenna, you have had the challenge lately of working with all of our new clients. And Jenna, as everyone knows who listens to the podcast, is much more bubbly, shall we say?
Enthusiastic,
and people just naturally follow around her. And she has this way of kind of getting people, working together. But we had an incident, you were not there, which is probably why. But we had an incident this last week in one of our organizations where they were just starting out. And during one of the procedures that I observed, there really was some confusion during the procedure about who was who in the room. I mean, literally, who was the charge nurse and who was not. And it's the type of thing that, first of all, should never, ever, ever happen. And, we pulled everybody aside and we just, we said, no excuses. This is what you have to decide beforehand. Can you just talk a little bit about, as you're helping to prep, these organizations and, we all learn from our mistakes. I don't think we made a mistake in this case, but I think what happens is that you just have to continually work with the organizations to get them prepared for it. So just talk a little bit about, the challenges that we have in making teams work together.
Well, I work a lot on the policy side too, and I write policies for this and, I'll use examples from other surgery centers and what I've seen work in the past, but every center is different. And until you really have a good conversation between the different people who are going to be filling the various roles, you really can't write a policy about how things are actually going to be done and who's going to be responsible for what. That really needs to be a conversation between the people who are going to actually be doing those jobs day in and day out. I think that it is important, especially with a startup, that you really do have that team building experience and that those conversations about who's going to, be responsible for what and how are we going to function as a team. And the team building itself, just, working well together with a good flow.
Right. At the very base, you have to have that conversation. And then if you have the luxury of time, I mean, I'm serious about this, these games that you do, such as using pandemic in order to, have people have that conversation. We played pandemic the other day and, we were all working together to try to solve the problem. We failed. But that wasn't the point. The point is that we were all working together and we're having to do training,
Well, that's why we do drills.
Like, that's exactly right. That's what a drill is, actually. It's almost a game, shall we say, in that we're, working together to solve a particular issue. And I guess that's an important point that we should make here, is that if your drill is not like that, if things don't go wrong during your drill, you're probably not doing the drill right. I mean, the whole idea behind a drill is not to prove that we already know how to do it. It's to learn from those things that are going wrong. Well, this has been great. I know we want to go out and do some hiking here. I don't have my hiking boots. I guess I can't go. Yeah. Thank you for everybody here, especially the spouses who don't have to be here. I'll loosen your chains off in a few minutes, and we'll get going. And let's take a short break, and we'll probably be back for another segment. Thanks. So that was great. I mean, I know that not everybody was terribly excited about having a microphone shoved in front of them.
Maybe not real comfortable.
No.
I think
Not everybody is as outgoing and loves to have a microphone in front of them as Judy and I, myself, and you for that matter also. Yeah. I felt, we were just talking about this after we listened to that segment again, that Judy said something that I think is just so important and just needs to be emphasized again. Yeah. She talked about, you know, about how doing an education program, taking 30 minutes, an hour, even 2 hours for doing this training is really an investment in your future. And that it could save you incredible amount of time. You know, for example, if your employees don't know what to do and during a survey these things come out, you have the huge plan of correction that's going to take you, you know, a lot of time in order to write it. You're going to have to re-educate them anyway. So, you know, consider when you're making these choices about how you're going to educate your employees, consider that this is an investment. It's not lost time. It's not something that you're doing because you absolutely have to do it. And don't look at it as wasted time where you're just sitting people in front of a piece of paper and making them sign off on it. It is really important that they take this to heart.
I think it's like, it's how people always look at prevention. I think whether you're talking about society or, you know, school children or anything, the more you put in toward educating and preventing problems, it always pays off afterwards. Absolutely. It's just always hard to bring your focus back to that. You know, people want to react to the problems that happen, and sometimes it's hard to get in front of that and prevent. And, you know, with education, but that's really where you need to put your focus.
I think it's also the thing that strikes me as I'm listening to all the things we've talked about over the last hour here, is that we make this assumption that we are professionals that know this already, that we don't have to learn it again. You know, like HIPAA, we always assume, oh, we've been trained this, we don't need to listen to it again. OSHA, we don't need to listen to this again. And that's not really true. I can't remember what I did 2 hours ago, let alone, you know, what we learned a year ago. I mean, a lot of that high-level stuff, of course, sticks with us.
Yeah.
But it really is important for us to revisit that on a regular basis and to rethink what we've been taught and, you know, to make sure that we have the latest information. You know, things happen. Yeah. Inter-industry infection control, for example, is an evolving industry, is an evolving area that needs to have constant, you know, re-education there. And they're really...
And part of that, I think, falls on the educator, because I know there have been times when year after year I've done the same hand hygiene test. And you know the same... I mean, it's just... You feel like, why am I sitting here listening to the same thing? Yeah. So change it a little bit. Add different information, even if just different questions. So you feel like it's not a waste of your time because maybe... Right. You know, you're seeing something, even if it's the same information presented slightly differently. Some new, as you said, some new information that's come out.
Right.
You know, just keeping that updated.
Well, I remember this last year, Judy had to do a retraining on HIPAA because we had been, you know, training, doing quite a bit of training on HIPAA in one of our clients. And there were a couple, you know, not major, but there were a couple incidents that really shouldn't have happened. And we were realizing that we've been continuing to train, you know, using similar programs year over year. But, you know, we did it. This was like the third reiteration of the training. And Judy decided to do like role playing. And that, first of all, got people much more interested. The session did go a little bit longer. Yep. But doing that role playing and walking through it seemed to have finally gotten through it. And by the way, there have been no incidents since that additional training was done.
Yeah.
So I guess that shows that, you know, that it really works. So if it's not working, you know, consider doing something different. You know, that's an old adage that if you're doing things the same way, you're going to get the same results.
Well, and anytime it's individual, whether it's drills or anything like that, when you can be invested in it and see things, how it applies to your real life. You know, some of the, like some of the HIPAA training that I've had has been almost an insult to anybody's intelligence. You know, if you see a pregnancy test, you do you run out and throw a party for your neighbor that she's pregnant? Well, no.
Delve into those deeper ones, those more difficult questions.
Yeah, that are a little bit, I mean, maybe somebody just starting out needs some of that basic. Yeah. I don't know, but, you know, some of those more gray area and work through that and involve, you know, that problem solving in your employees, because that's what you want them to do. They're not going to always, you know, have a cut and dried situation. You want them to be able to work through different problems as they come up.
Right. And I think to finish up this whole area, one of the things that we've talked a little bit about, but we should probably end the conversation with this, is the importance of drilling, of, you know, when it comes to, and doing drills for various types of things. You know, we know the common drills for disasters and fires and things like that, but do drills for, you know, what's going to happen if one of your providers becomes incapacitated during a procedure. Mm-hmm. Doing a drill to assess how you're going to handle an abusive provider, somebody that you know, perhaps starts an argument during a procedure and that's not appropriate. Good role-playing type things. Mm-hmm. So think outside the box when it comes to the different types of scenarios. That allows you to walk through those scenarios in a real, you know, real situation there, you know, given an opportunity to do things. And train people in that mechanism. It's a lot of our drills, we have really ramped up drills this last year, and we're getting a lot of good feedback on the way we're doing these things because we're creating realistic scenarios, and then people are getting much more engaged. You know, the old fire drill of, you know, you pull the fire alarm and everybody goes out nice and quietly. Mm-hmm. That, you know, nobody wants to do that. Nobody learns anything from that. But, you know, walk them through a scenario that is different than what they're used to seeing, and having them think a little bit about what their training was and what they should be doing.
And get that practice so that, as you said, an abusive provider, maybe somebody's afraid to speak up, but if during this drill they speak up, and maybe it's handled in a different way, there are people that maybe would jump right out there and say something, other people that maybe need to find a different way of dealing with it, and those are the processes that you can work through.
Absolutely. Well, this has been great. Let's take a short break, and we'll finish up our episode for this week. You can get one AU credit for listening to this podcast. In order to do that, go to our website at www.ascpodcast.com, follow the links for AEU credits, and enter the following code in the link there, as well as the name that you wish to have on your certificate. And then there's a nominal fee of $35 for the certificate. The code is PH0516. That's P as in Peter, H as in Harry, 0516. Enter that with the name that you wish to have on your certificate, pay the $35 fee, and we'll send you off a certificate. So let's talk about what's coming up on the ASC podcast with John Gailey. Each week, we discuss the latest news in the industry, discuss upcoming events, and review one or two areas of interest to ASC professionals. Don't forget, if you are CAST certified, you can get one AEU credit for listening to this episode. Just follow the links on ASCpodcast.com to sign up for that AU credit. And you can also get one AU credit for listening to episode 22 on pharmacy. So again, go to the website, ASCpodcast.com, and follow the links. Next week, July 9th, we'll be talking about the proposed 2019 CMS, ASC, HOPD. Boy, that's a lot of initials, isn't it? So,
yes, it is.
I just realized that. So the CMS regulations, new regulations for 2019 for ambulatory surgery centers and hospital outpatient departments will come somewhere during this next week. So we'll either do a special episode or we'll include it in our July 9th episode. And then we're also going to talk about public relations and working with the public and dealing with difficult situations based upon a recording that we did during the New Jersey State Association meeting. Of course, all podcast content is subject to change if something important comes up, and that you know, we always like to address those issues on a timely basis. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some upcoming events in the ASC industry.
Hey, so every week we will inform you of upcoming events. If you would like your event to be included in the podcast, please send the event information to info@ascpodcast.com.
Note that we have a calendar of events on our website at www.ascpodcast.com.
Registration for the online CAPE exam that will be administered during the month of October at various testing centers throughout the United States is August 1st through 31st, 2018. To register, go to www.aboutcape.org. That's www.aboutcape.org.
California Ambulatory Surgery Association has its CASA annual conference September 5th through the 7th, 2018 in Huntington Beach.
Ohio State Association meeting will be September 18th through the 20th at the Hilton Polaris in Columbus, Ohio.
The Pennsylvania Ambulatory Surgery Association annual meeting is October 1st, 2018 at the Sheridan Harris Hershey Hotel in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's hard to say.
It is. A lot of P's.
The fifth annual New York Metro ASC Symposium, November 2nd, 2018 at the Marriott Marquis in the heart of Times Square.
The CASA Infection Prevention Seminar is November 7th through the 8th, 2018 at Costa Mesa.
Registration for the online CASC exam will be administered during the month of October at various testing centers throughout the United States. And that is August 1st through 31st, 2018. To register, go to www.aboutcasc.org. That's www.aboutcasc.org.
And again, if you'd like to have your event listed on our website and discussed on air, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. I should mention that we're working with many state associations right now and organizations to bring our podcast to their association. So if you are a state association and would love to have us visit, we'd love to be there and to spend some time talking to your association leaders about what's going on in your state, as well as to interview some of the people that come and speak at your conferences. And we'll be speaking at the Ohio State Association, the Pennsylvania Association. I think I'm doing Massachusetts. I don't think that's even on our list yet here. Mm-hmm. And I'll be at the New York Metro Conference in November. And the New York State Association will be having a fall conference too. That date has not yet been set, but we're getting close. So. Well, that's it for this week's podcast, and please spread the word about our podcast with your friends and colleagues, and do us the honor of hitting the subscribe button. See you next week.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors. First, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For a free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including the Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.